Mimches Amid Beis, 8 lines up from the bottom, Lema Kitanoi. Early in the middle of the Amud, Itmar, we had a machlokes between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan with regard to a down payment, a Ravon. Rav says Kineged Kulo Hukona, Kinegdo Hukona, and Rabbi Yochanan says Kineged Kulo Hukona. According to Rav, he's only Kona that segment, that percentage that reflects and corresponds to the down payment. As much as the down payment is, that's what he's Kona. Rabbi Yochanan holds, and we tried to explain yesterday that Rabbi Yochanan is of the opinion that Dvar Torah Mos Konos, and therefore Kesef is Kona, is Kineged Kulo Hu Kona. Kesef becomes a Kinyan on the entire sum. Lema Kitanoi, shall we say that this issue, this machlokus between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, is in fact a machlokus Tanoi. Hamalve, the Brisa says that Hamalve is Chavir al Amashkon. Now, just a little background, the Torah tells us that on the Shemitah year, at the end of the Shemitah year, all the chovos, all the loans are cancelled, all the debts are cancelled, and the lov who borrowed money doesn't have to pay back his loan. And this you'll see in Dvarim Tesvav, the Zedvar HaShemitah, Shmot Kol Baal Mashe Yodo. And the Torah in that same context says, Lo Yigos Esreyeru Ves Echov Ki Kara Shemitah Lashem. So that's the law of Shemitah. Shemitah breaks up the loan. The Malva can no longer press the Lova for the Chov. And that's called Shmot. Here, we have the exception to the rule. If the Malva is holding on to a Mashkon, meaning the Lova gave the Malva a Mashkon, and therefore the Malva no longer has to press the Lova. The whole idea of Shmot is to undermine and terminate this Yigos, the pressing of the Lova. Here, the Malva doesn't have to press the Lova. He's already holding on to a Mashkon. And when he's Tofes Mashkon, that's not considered Noges B'Echov, and therefore it's considered like mamono, as if the mamon of the loaf is in the hands of the malva, and there's no longer a din of Shemitah. If you take a look at Rashi here, 5 lines up from the bottom, in the middle of this Rashi, he says, Dilo karinen belo yigos, share eno tova klum. That if the malva gets a mashkon, then this is not included in the parasha of Shemitah, where the Torah says, lo yigos, don't press him, because there's no need for the Malva to press him. He has the Mashkin in his hand, and therefore there's no din of Shemitah to be Meshame Techov. But what happens in a case where the Mashkon is not equal in value to the Chov itself? That's going to be this Brisa, the subject of this Machlokas. A Malvis Chavir La Mashkon, Afal Pishay Neshove El Plag. The Brisa gives a case where the mashkon is worth half the value of the loan itself. The nichnasa hashmita, and now Shemitah comes, the end of the Shemitah year, the 7th year, and the malva, in the case of a mashkon, the shvius is not meshamet, it doesn't break up the chov, and the malva could collect that chov. Afal pichein a shovel a plag, is eno meshamet, Divrei Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. In other words, the Mashkon is Mafkia, the din of Shemitah, and the Malva is allowed to collect his Chov. There's no Hashmot, there's no Shmot on the Chov. And the Lova now has to return the money to the Malva, and all this is a result of a Mashkon, which is only worth half the value of the Chov. That's Divrei Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi Omer, Im Hoya Mashkon Kineged Alvaso. When is it true that Mashkon is Mafkia Shemitah? That's only if the Mashkon is worth the value of the loan itself, is Eino Meshamet, and then the Lov has to pay up the Chov. V'im Lav, but if the Mashkon is less than the value of the Chov, let's say he borrowed 1,000 and the Mashkon is only worth 800, is Meshamet. Or the Mashkin's worth only 500, like we said before, plag. So in such a case, says Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, the Mashkon is not effective to remove Shemitah, but Shemitah's Meshamit the Chov, and therefore the Lova doesn't have to pay the Chov. And now the Gemara is going to analyze what is the scope of this machlokus. To what extent does Rabbi Shimon Gamliel say that this mashkan on half the value of the chov is mafkia shmita, and the lov has to pay the chov? And in what case, to what extent does Rabbi Yehuda Nasi say no, since the malva was less than the value of the chov, therefore the shmita law is in full force? My eino mishami tekomer Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Let's start with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. He says that despite the fact that the mashkin is only worth half of the chov, nevertheless, eino mishamit, it's mafkia shmita. And the Gemara wants to know, how do we understand Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? Is he saying that the mashkon is effective on the entire chov, so now the malva can collect and the lov has to pay the entire chov? Oh, or perhaps, no. He only means to say, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that the hafkos shmita corresponds to the value of the mashkon. So on half of the loan, the malva could collect the chov by virtue of the mashkon that's worth half the chov. And the balance, the other half of the chov, eino chinami, shmita will be mishamit. Ilema kenegdo, if we're going to go with that second pshat, that according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, when he said eino mishamit, meaning that the mashkin is meaningful, is effective to mafkia shmita, that's only keneged. What does it mean? Kenegdo, keneged, it corresponds to the value of the mashkon. And the Gemara says that that's very difficult. Why? Because let's now jump ahead to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Michlal, to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, Savar, Lahach Palganami Mishamet, that the mashkon is totally ineffective, and it has no meaning as far as Shemitah is concerned. The Shemitah law will break up this chov completely, and the lover doesn't have to pay anything, not even that portion, that segment of the chov that corresponds in value to the value of the mashkon. So now we're going to say that according to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, the malva is not considered to be tofus in the mashkon. I mean, the malva is holding on to a mashkon. At least grant me that there's part of the chov. There's no lo yigos, and therefore there should be no shmot, no shmita. And now we begin mem tesem and alf. Ella mashkon dinokit lomale. If you're going to tell me that according to this interpretation, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi is saying that the mashkon is not mafkia shmita at all, then why did the lova bother giving the malva mashkon? Why did the malva bother taking the mashkon? The only way I can make sense out of the mashkon is if the malva wanted to grab onto part of the chov, and therefore there's no lo yigos on that part of the chov, and at least on that part of the chov there should be no shmita, and the malva should have rights to collect that part of the chov. Ella lav shmamina, but rather we now have to reinterpret this brisa. My eino mishamit tekomer Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, eino mishamit bekulo. It means that he's only mishamit keneged the chov. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is claiming that the mashkon is effective, and it's effective beyond its own value. In other words, even though the mashkin is only worth half of the chov, it's moil, it's meaningful, connected to the entire chov. In other words, it's mafkia shmita completely with regard to this chov. The malva could collect this chov from A to Z, from soup to nuts, the entire chov. Umay mishamet tekom Rav Yehuda ba'anasi, when Rav Yehuda Anasi says that shmita is still effective and the mashkin is not capable of being mafkia shmita, it's lahach palgdol noked ale mashkin. What he was referring to, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, is on that half which goes above and beyond the value of the mashkin, meaning the value of the mashkin is only 500, the chov is 1,000. That second 500 is not within the purview of this mashkin. It's not impacted by this mashkin, and therefore the law of shmita applies to that half. Ubahakam biflagi. And now we get back to the machlokas Rav and Shmuel, Rav and Rav Yochanan that we spoke about. The Rav Shimon ben Gamliel Savar keneged kula hu koneh. Rav Shim Gamliel is the originator of the Shita of Rabbi Yochanan, that when the Malva gets a Mashkon, he's Kona the entire Chov. The Mashkon is connected to the entire Chov. And that's what we saw by a down payment by the Ravon in the Shita of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi Sover, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi is of the opinion, like Rav, that Kenegdo Hu Kona, that the Kenyan power of a Mashkin is only to the extent to which it corresponds to the value of this Mashkon, and that's the Shita of Rav. Since the Mashkon was only on half the Chov, it's meaningful on half the Chov to remove the Shmot, and therefore there's no Shmita on that half of the Chov. So it comes out that the Machlokas between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan is an old Machlokas that predates them, back to the time of the Tanoim, as codified in this Braisa. The Gemara says, "Lo, you don't have to say that the machlokas of the Tanoim is identical to the machlokas of Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, and the machlokas Tanoim is not about the Chatzi Chov, that second half of the Chov that goes above the value of the Mashkin, but rather my Eino Mishame Tekaomer Rav Shimon Gamliel." What did Rav Shimon Gamliel mean when he said that this Mashkin is effective in Gansen completely, and therefore there's no law of Shemitah with regard to the Chov, no part of the Chov? That's Lahach Palga de Noket Alei Mashkin. What he meant was, no, not the way you interpreted it, that, like in the light of Rabbi Yochanan, that the Mashkin is Kona for the entire Chov. No, it's only Kona and the corresponding half of the Chov, 500, that the Mashkin is worth. Oh, now you can ask me the Kasha Michlal, the Rabbi Yehuda Nasi Sovar. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, by process of elimination, must be holding Lahach Palga de Nokalei Mashkin Nami Mishamit. This Mashkin is not effective at all. And even on the 500, which corresponds to the value of the Mashkin, there still is a law of Shemitah that breaks up the Chov, and the Lover doesn't have to pay the Chov. El Mashkin de Nokit Lomali. Ah, your Kasha was, why did the Malva bother taking a Mashkin? If not for the fact that he wanted to grab onto half of the Chov, and on that half of the Chov there's no lo yigos, he doesn't have to run around and press the lover to pay back. And, you know, if you're telling me that according to Rabbi Yehuda, even on the Palga to not get this Shemitah's Meshamet, so then the entire Mashkin is meaningless. So the Gemara answers, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi is of the opinion that the Malva holds on to this Mashkin lezichron dvar bialma. And when it says lezichron dvar bialma, it could mean a memory device, meaning that the Malva has to remember that he has a chov by so-and-so. He may have written in a ledger, but he doesn't have access to that. He's forgotten. But if he's holding on to the Mashkin, that's going to be a memory device. Or maybe beyond that, by holding on to the Mashkin, he's going to force the lover to pay up, because the lover wants to get back his Mashkin. And therefore the Malva is not considered a Muchzok, even on half of the Chov, the Mashkin is not meaningful at all to remove the law of Shemitah. And that's called in the Lashon HaShas, Lezichron Dvarim B'Alma. So again, even though we're saying now, according to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, that this Mashkon, although it's worth half the Chov, it's worth 500, it doesn't have any power to be makne the Chov, or half the Chov, the 500, to the Malva, and therefore Shemitah will come and break it up. But why, you'll ask me, according to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, did the Malva bother with this Mashkin? And the answer is, number one, that the Mashkin will serve as a memory device, so that he knows that he's going to collect the Chov. Or even more profound than that, if the Lova doesn't pay up the Chov, the Malva is going to say, you know what, I'm going to hold on to, I'm going to be ma'akiv this Mashkin. I'm not going to give it back to you right away. Now, according to the Gemara here, it comes out that none of the Tanoim hold that the Mashkin is meaningful keneged kulo. In other words, in the maximum sense, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, in the best case scenario, is Kona half of the Chov through this Mashkin. And this lechor is against Rabbi Yochanan, who says that the Mashkin is keneged kulo, that the power of the Mashkin is to collect everything, the entire sum. And here we see it's against the Tanoim. But the Rabban brings that another gears in that Gemara that says, Rabbi Yochanan vadai Tanoi hi. According to Rabbi Yochanan, there's definitely a machlokas Tanoim. And we're going back to our original pshat, in which Rabbi Yehuda Nasi says that you only, the malv is only kona keneged the mashka, meaning the 500, whereas Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel is of the opinion that the mashkan is kona keneged kula, and Rabbi Yochanan squares off with Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, which is fine. Rav Kahana Yavi leZuzi Akisna. We're going back to the discussion about Misha Pora. If you recall back on Daf Mem Dalid, we established in the Mishnah that if the Lokeach pays up the Domin, but the Kinyan Mashiach on the object that's being sold has not yet been made, in such a case, even though technically the Kinyan is not binding, and both the Mocher and the Lokeach could drop out, and the Lokeach is going to get his money back from the Mocher, but nevertheless, if one of them is Choser, he gets a Misha Parah. And in this case, Rav Kahana sold flax. Kisna Kisana is flax. And the buyers paid him a down payment. And now Lesof, Iyakir Kisna. The market value of flax went up. And therefore, Rav Kahana would like to get out of this deal because he committed himself to sell the Kisna at a lower price. Now we can get a higher price. Also, Lekami de Rav, he came in front of Rav, and he asked him, am I allowed to be Choser B? Because since the Meshicha was not made on the Kisna, and only part of the payment was given over, can I back out? Amo Lepemai de Nikiti Zuzi Havlahu. The pishton, which is valued as the same value of the down payment, that give him. You know, you have to deliver that. And if you don't, then you'll get a misha parfit idach, and the balance of pishton, which does not correspond to the mos that he gave you, is dvarim ninu. That's only you made a commitment to sell him, but there was no miktas kinyan at all. Udvarim ein bahem. Udvarim ein bahem mishum mechusrei amana. And if it's just dibur without any sort of transfer of money, without any sort of kinyan, then it's just dibur, and there's no sheker here. It's not like you're unreliable. You've cheated anyone. You have good reason to rescind the original deal, because now you find that Kisna's up in value, the most that you received, okay, that he was Kona, the buyer was Kona, Kisna Kenegin Amos. So that part of the Kisna you're going to have to deliver, but above and beyond the balance, that you don't have to give him. You made a commitment to sell him this entire volume of Kisna for the monies that he haven't been forthcoming yet, although the down payment was made. Is that's called dvarim? That means you made a commitment. So again, you've given the buyer keneged the zuzi. So that you did. Now you're talking about the balance of it, the pishtam beyond that, in that value that you committed to sell him. That's already dvarim. That's only hot air, and that doesn't generate mechusrei amona. We're going to soon see that this position of the Gemara is very problematic, to say the least. The Itmar, we learned, the Dvarim, if a person made a commitment to sell something, and now he wants to renege, Rav Omar Ein Bahem Mishum Mechusrei Amana, we would not describe this mocher as some sort of unethical, non-trustable person because he says one thing, but he doesn't live up to his promises. Rav Yochanan Amar Yesh Bahem Mishum Mechusrei Amana. A person is not allowed to rescind that commitment that he made verbally, even if no mos were given over. And if he does back out of the deal, then he's called a Mechusrei Amana. That's an ethical category which is not very positive. It's not neutral. It's negative. And this this now gives us a whole different light on Rav Kahana. What Rav Kahana got from Rav, right, when he asked Rav the question about whether he can chozer bo on the sale of the kisna, and Rav allowed him to do it. That's Rav l'shitoso against Rav Yochanan as to whether or not dvarim is yesh ben michusre amono or ein ben michusre amono. Rav Yochanan is of the opinion yesh ben michusre amono, and Rav says no. So when Rav Kahana came for a direction from Rav directed him to say that the balance, which is above and beyond keneged hamos, on that balance it's dvar bialma. And that's what we have here in the name of Rav. Excuse me, at dvar bialma ein be mishum mechusei amona. Meisvei, the Gemara has a kash on Rav from a brisa. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yudo, Mer Ma Talmud Lomar. What does the pasuk mean? This is in Vayikra Yutes and Pasuk Kedoshim. It says, "Mi Mosne Tzedek Avne Tzedek Efas Tzedek." Your scales have to be perfect, so that you don't cheat anybody. And then there's something called Avnei Tzedek V'Efas Tzedek. And we're going to emphasize those words, Efas Tzedek. Efa is a measurement. Efa is Shlosha Se'im. And Hin, what is the word Hin? Hin Tzedek. Yilechem Hin is going to tell us something else. We have here Efas Tzedek and Hin Tzedek, which Rashi on the Parsha says that one is a scale that's used to measure dry goods, the other is a kind of a scale that's uniquely designated for liquids. But the Gemara now is operating on a different level. Hello, asked Rabbi Yossi, Hin bichlal eifahaya. Hin is a small kli in which you can measure up to 12 lug, whereas Efa is a gigantic measuring utensil which can hold even as much as 72 lug, Ayin Beis lug. So you went from Yud Gimel a Katan to Ayin Beis a Gadol. Oh, so what does Rabbi Yossi want to derive from this equation, if you will, between Efa and Hin? Says Rav Yossi, "Valo hin bichlal efahaya. If hin is a smaller measuring cup that can only fit yud beis lug, then it's already included in efa, which can fill up ayin beis lug. So just like the mita gedola needs to be perfect, you know, really on, you know, on the ball to the minute." Fraction of a penny, so too in the case of a midah ketana, it also has to be meticulous, it also has to be precise, and that's the hint. And basically we have here a kal v'chomer, because if in the case of a midah gedola the Torah was makpid to make sure that nothing is imprecise about this about this scale, the scale is absolutely bullets on target, how much more so in the case of a midah ketana, where we really should be makpid on any sort of chisaron, if there's any discrepancy, and the buyer is being cheated. So why did the Torah therefore need hin tzedek? If hin tzedek is the midah ketana, which is already included under the efas tzedek, which is a kli gadol, so ayin beis lug. So, what's the point in mentioning hin tzedek? Ella says Rav Yossi, the Gemara, the pasuk wants to tell me something on the side, so to speak. And what is that? Lomer lachoshia hey hein shalcha tzedek velav shalcha tzedek. The hin tzedek is a reference to the hein tzedek, meaning that when you say yes, I'm going to sell you something, be good for your word and don't back out. On the other hand, it says Eifa, and we're deriving from that the Lav Shelcha, is also got to be Tzedek. What does it mean, Lav Shelcha has to be Tzedek? So if you take a look in the Mefarshim here, the Ben Ish Chai, he gives a pshat. He says that, imagine the case where a person is about to renovate his house, and he would love to buy the adjacent apartment if it's only for sale, combining the two apartments and doing a renovation on both apartments together. So he asks his neighbor if he's planning to sell his apartment, and his neighbor says no. And then after the guy goes ahead and does this very expensive shiputz, he renovates that top quality, then his neighbor tells him, you know what, I'm selling my house. Now, what's going to happen now? If he wants to combine these two houses, he's going to have to break down walls, and he's going to lose a great sum of money which he invested in the in the renovation. So even your low should be honest. When a person says, no, I'm not going to sell it, that's the genuine, honest-to-goodness truth. And clearly this brisa of Rabbi Yossi is antithetical to the position of Rav. Because what we're talking about here is lomar lechoshe hein shelcha tzedek. We're talking about dibur. We're talking about a promise to someone. The mocher is good to his word that he'll sell this. And the neighbor is good to his word that he's not planning to sell it. All that is dibur bialma. And yet, afal pichein, Rabbi Yossi says that we derive from a pasuk here that you'd be in violation of a lav of an essay if you weren't honest about it, if you made a commitment to sell something and you backed out of it. Amar Abaye says, don't ask a kash on Rav, hahu shelo yedaber echad bepeh v'echad belev. This presentation of Rabbi Yossi in the Braisa is a battle, a campaign against someone who at the moment that he promises something to his friend, for example, to sell him something, he doesn't really have that in mind. He's not serious about it. Even at that moment when he promised his friend to sell, he had in mind not to sell. That's called Echad Bepeh V'Echad Belev. Again, if he had in mind at the time that he made this promise, he really intended to follow through with it, but now things have changed, market fluctuations, etc., etc., that's one thing. And that's where Rav says it, and even Rabbi Yossi would say it, is that in such a case, if the promise was made and he backs down from his promise, then that's okay. He doesn't get a Misha Para, he doesn't get a whammy or some sort of nizifa. We're not going to call it Ein Ruach HaChomim Nochei Menu, or he's Mechusar Amona. No, none of those appellations, those wonderful names will apply to him. Why? Because it was just a promise, and at the time that he made the promise, he intended, he had full intention and all honesty and sincerity to follow through and to live up to that promise. Where does Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, and this Braisa go on a tirade against someone who violates the essay of Eifas Tzedek Vehin Tzedek? That's going to be a case of someone who's Echad Bepev Echad Balev, meaning at the very moment that he made the promise, he wasn't serious about it. He was intending, you know, he just made the promise in order to placate his friend or distract him or whatever it might be, but he didn't have any intention whatsoever to sell it. And in that case, he certainly fits under this essay of Hin Tzedek and Eifas Tzedek. Meisvei, now the Gemara quotes a second braisa that's against Rav. And this price is based on what we saw on Memches Amud Aleph, Rav Shimon Omer, Afal Bisha Amru Talis Kona Dinar Zav, V'ein Dinar Zav Kona Talis, Mikol Makom Kach Halacha, and we're going to see the Mishapara, meaning what Rav Shimon says in this brisa is that despite the fact that in order for this transaction in which Reuven is giving his talis, selling his talis over to Shimon for a dinar zav, for that transaction to be binding and no one could be chozer bo, it's got to be a case where the meshicha was made on the talis. If, on the other hand, the flip case where the buyer paid damim to the mocher for this talis, but he hasn't yet implemented any sort of kinyan on the gufa shel talis, any sort of a kinyan meshicha, then kach halacha, it says. The Braisa says, in the name of Shimon, kach halacha. Kach halacha means this is what the ikra din is, and that's where it stands at this point. But now Beis Din could force him to sell what he promised to sell to his friend, in this case the talis, and he's going to get a mishapara. If he insists on backing down from the deal, which Mikra did, he's allowed to, kachi alocha, and he can say, here, take your mos back, I'm holding on to my talis. Well, in such a case, he's going to get a mishapara. Why? Because he's already been paid, and that payment, although it doesn't clinch a kinyan, but it's enough to clinch an absolute commitment, the omission of which engenders a status of mishapara. And that's what it says here at the end of this braisa. Aval Omru, the Chacham said that mishapara mi'anshei dara mabul, mi'anshei dara flogo, mi'anshei stoma mora, mi'misrayim bayam, hu osid li para mi'misha eno omed bidiburo. Someone sells something to his friend with a kinyan kesef, and he backs out of the deal, he gets a mishapara. And the next part of the braisa, Rashi says that the kasha, the gemara, is going to be from the next part of the braisa. It says, v'anosein bidvarim she'eni moim mos lo kana. V'achozer bo ein ruach hachomim nocha heimenu. In the safe of the braisa, there was no transfer of monies. It was bidvarim. It was no seven osim bidvarim, no mos, and there's no kinyan, obviously. But if one person backs down, is ein ruach hachomim no chaymenu, and that's difficult according to Rav, because Rav is not happy with someone who makes a commitment. Let me just go over that. Rav is okay. He's happy with with someone who made a commitment, but he didn't give mos. He's not called a mechusar amana. You know, he's still considered an upstanding trustworthy citizen. Whereas here in this price, it's clear that although a mishapara is not appropriate for someone who's chosu midiburo, but ein ruach hachamim no chaymenu. And the Gemara answers Tanoi he. That in fact, this braisa that you quote, that ein ruach hachomim nocheimenu, is a tana that disagrees with Rav, but there's another tana who agrees with Rav. And now the Gemara is going to go on a search, who is this tana that agrees with Rav, and ein bedvarim mishum mechusrei amona, disnan. We're going to have a Mishnah later on. Ma'isiv, Rabbi Yochanan ben Masya, Sha'omer libno, Tsei uschar lanu palim. So Rabbi Yochanan has to leave town, and he appoints his son as his bimkom, as his substitute, to hire workers. Halach, the son went ahead and he hired Jewish workers, Upasak lehem mizonos, and he promised them that he would give them food to eat. When he came to his father, and his father showed up, so his father asked him, Bini, how much did you intend to feed these workers? And have they started working already? If they started working already, then your commitment is binding. Is afilu ata oselem kesuda shlomo b'shaito lo yotzas. Lo yotzasa yedecha vascha imayim. You should know, he says, my dear son, that no matter what banquet you roll over out on the table for them, you will never be able to fulfill your obligation in a perfect way, Shehem b'nei Avram, Yitzhak v'Yaakov, and they are deserved of a Suda. Like, for example, you have the Suda of Shlomo HaMelech, which was gigantic when Shlomo HaMelech was the king. And then you have a Suda of Avram Avinu in this week's Parsha, which is even greater, the Chazal say, than more lavish than the Suda of Shlomo HaMelech. No matter what Suda you'll do for them, you can never do enough for them. They are B'nai Yaakov, Avram, Yitzhak v'Yaakov. Ella. But let's see what happens here. Ad shelo yaschilu b'malacha, if they haven't yet begun their malacha. And the Gemara is going to explain a little bit later on that at the very moment that they begin the malacha, there's a hischaivus, an absolute monetary commitment on the part of the Baal Bais to live up to his promises. That's a financial commitment. Is in such a case, again, what are we talking about? Lo ischilu b'malacha. We're talking about the case where they haven't. Because again, once they're maschil b'malacha, then it's an irreversible commitment. Is tzeveh marlem, go out and say, almanas she'en lechem alai alapas v'kitnis bilvat. That you're changing the terms of the agreement and tell them that you're not going to feed them more than the basic minimum wage of a piece of bread and some lentil beans. And the question that we want to ask over here is, if we assume that even a verbal commitment is enough to engender a mechusar amana, some sort of negative status, then isal kedaitach dvarim yeshpa mishum mechusar amana is hechi amrle zil hadarbach. How could the father, Rabbi Yochanan ben Masi, instruct his children to rescind their original promise, and instead of giving them some sort of lavish food, lavish meals, they should give them the bare bones meal? This should be a mechusar amana. But the answer is that this Tana, Rabbi Yochanan ben Masya, is of the same opinion as Rav, that in the case of Dvarim B'Alma, there's no category of mechusar amana, there's nothing unethical about it. So the Gemara says, no. If you're basing yourself on the story of Rabbi Yochanan ben Masya, that's not a proof. That's not a valid deduction. Why? Shani Hasam, the poem Gufayu lo Somcha Datai. The reason why you become a Mechusar Amana when you make a commitment is because the Tzad Shekinegda, the person who received your commitment, is dependent upon you. And he's totally dependent upon you. I mean, we're going to see later on in the case of Meiser that if a person promises a certain levy that he's going to give a Meiser, then that levy could consider it a done deal, as if the Meiser is in his possession, and that has tremendous implications. Here, though, the Poland themselves did not rely on your promise. Why, my timer? May the Yodi, they understood the Alavua Samach, that you were really just representing your father, and ultimately you'd have to get your father's okay. So they understood from the get-go that whatever the father would agree to give them in terms of food, that's what they're going to get. So they never fully relied on the promise of the Ben. The Ben is not authorized to make such a commitment. So the Gemara now is a little bit confused because Ihachi afilu schilu b'mlocha nami. In the words of Rabbi Yochanan ben Masya, if the Polim haven't started yet, they haven't started the work yet, the Yischaivus is not binding, and therefore there's no problem of changing the terms of agreement as far as the level of food that they're going to be fed. But if it was hischilu b'malacha, then Rabbi Yochanan ben Masya says we no backs. There's no possibility of reversing it because the haschol samalacha on a dini mominus level, forget about the ethical element, clinches the hischayvus, and that's why there's no possibility of changing the terms of agreement once the workers began their labor. But this doesn't make any sense now because you're telling me that they were never somech daitam on this ben, So even when they started the malacha, they weren't starting the malacha under the assumption that there was this chayvus mitzad, the balabayas, to give them this high-end level of food, because they knew that the son was not authorized to make that commitment on behalf of his father. And the Gemara answers, "Ischilu b'malacha vaday somchi datayu." For the following reason, we assume that once they started their work, they certainly relied upon this havtacha that they heard from the ben. Why? Amru neymar amar kamede avu v'nichale. The Poles begin to convince themselves that it must be that he, the son, went back to his father to tell him, "Look, I made this commitment. Shall we? Will you, as my father and the owner of the field, would you carry through with that commitment and uphold that commitment?" And the father agreed. This is what the Poles assume. They're going to get sued as gedolos. Why? Because if it's come to the point where they began the malach already, at some point between the clincher of the deal and the commitment that came out of the mouth of the son and the actual beginning of the malacha, there was a correspondence, a communication between the son and the father, in which the son achieved getting approval from his father, and therefore they were samech daito. That's the case of Ischilu b'malacha. In any event, it comes out now that we haven't found a single Tana who holds that in the case of Dvarim, without Mos, that ain't by Mishum Mechusri Amona. And this is difficult on Rav, because we saw in the Brice of Talis Kone Dinar Zav that in the case of Dibur B'Alma, where there was no transfer of Mos, is Ein Ruach Hachamim Nochemenu. And now we're saying, in the context of this brisa, that Enochinami, if they were somech on the son, and they had reason to believe that the son was truly representing his father, then there would be no way, even before the Ischalas Malacha, that there could be a switch over here, that there could be a reversal. Because that reversal is going to generate a kind of Mechusar Amona category. Everyone seems to be against Rafi as far as the Brises are concerned. And indeed, this is the implication of the Sugya until we get to Rabbeinu Chananel. Rabbeinu Chananel, Dibur Maskil Tuv, he writes that this answer of the Gemara was rejected, and we should paskin like Rabbi Yochanan against Rav. The Gemara says, "Umi Amar Rabbi Yochanan Hachi." Is it really true that Rabbi Yochanan will slap you with a Mechusar Amona if you rescind and you reverse your commitment, even though there was no matan mos? V'amar Rabba Bar Mechanan Rabbi Yochanan, "Omer l'chaveru matana ani nosin l'cha yochol lachzor bo." Which means that if a person makes a commitment to give a gift to someone, nothing has happened besides his verbal statement, he can be chozer bo, he can decide not to give the gift. So the Gemara asks the obvious question, yochol pshita? You're telling me that he's allowed to rescind his and back down on his promise? That's pshita. There was never a kinyan. A promise without kinyan is never binding. Ella mutalach serbo. What Rabbi Yochanan meant to tell us over here is that he's allowed to reverse his decision and decide he's not going to deliver this gift, and that's not enough to give him an appellation, a category of Mechusar Amona. Even though, again, he's rescinding, he's reversing his original promise. So there's a stira now in the two statements of Rabbi Yochanan. On the one hand, Rabbi Yochanan says that even in the case of Dibur, you have a Mechusar Amona if you don't live up to your commitment. And on the other hand, in this particular scenario, in the case of a person who commits himself to give him a Tana, is mutalachzer bo v'ein bo bishum mechusar amona. Om Rav Papa umode Rabbi Yochanan b'matana mu'etes t'samcha datayu. Papa is going to offer a distinction between a matana mu'etes, where a person promises someone a limited, a cheap kind of deal, a gift, Desamcha datayu. In such a case, the recipient is looking forward; his eyes are upward turned towards this gift, as he thinks that the nosein amatanu will follow through. And in a case where Rabbi Yochanan says that he could be chozer bo, and it's not considered mechusar amana, that's a matana meruva, where there was no smichas das. From the get-go, his friend had doubts whether or not he would reach the day and that he could celebrate receiving such a significant matana. So at the end of the day, the maskana here is that according to Rabbi Yochanan, if he's chozer bo from something that he promised his friend, he's mechusar amana. But that only applies in a case of a matana mu'etes, because his friend relies upon that and is expecting that to happen. But in the case of matana ruba, there's no ethical violation here if he changes his mind and the recipient is not so mechdaito, and therefore there's no issue of mechusar amona. Hachinam mistabra, the Omer Rabbi Avom, Rabbi Yochanan, Yisrael, Shomer leben Levi. A Yisrael tells the Ben Levi that kar maser, one tenth of my produce that I designated for the Levium is maser, I'm going to give you a kar. And Yeshlech Abiyodi, I'm holding on to it now, but you can consider it as if it's yours. To what extent can the Ben Levi rely on such a promise? Ben Levi Rashai Lasos Trumas Maser al Mokom Acher. In other words, a Ben Levi has to be Mafresh Truma from his Maser, and he can use that, he can designate that Maser that he's going to receive from his friend who promised to deliver him that Maser as the Truma for the Maser that he has in his house. Now, if that Truma is valid, then the Maser is no longer tevel. If, on the other hand, the truma is not valid, because the Jew who promised him that maser is going to back down from it, then he's in big trouble. That's going to be a violation of an isur tevel. Iamit bishlema lo motzi mahader bei. If we assume that the one who promised, the Yisrael who promised the kor to the Levi, does not have rights on an ethical level to rescind his promise, is Mishum Hachi Rashai. That's why we understand why the Levi can be Mafresh and designate that which this Jew is about to deliver to him, or promise to deliver him as Truma, for the Maaser that he has B'Makom Acher. Ela'i Amit Motzi Mahadar Bey. But if you're going to tell me that a promise is just that, it's nothing more than a promise, and even in a matana mu'etes, like a kur of maser, nevertheless, the Yisrael is allowed to rescind his promise, and he's not called a mechusar amon, it's a mayra shoy, how can we allow the Levi to designate this kur maser as trumas maser for makom acher? Let's be afraid that at the end of the day, the Yisrael might change his mind and give the maser to a different Levi. And then we understand that the Afrashas Truma is not Afrashas Truma, it's Takik to Kaakal Tvolim. The Levi Chas Shom will be eating Tevel. And to violate an Isur Tevel is, I don't have to tell you, is a very, very severe Isur. In any event, from the fact that Rabbi Yochanan allowed the Levi, who received this promise, to designate that future, you know, the core Masa of the future as Truma's Masa, we see clearly that in the case of a matana mu'etes, like a kur maser, there's no chazorah. You know, we have ethically, there's no tolerance for chazorah here. He's not allowed to be chozer bo, and therefore the Levi can rely on the Yisrael following through with his promise. The Gemara says there's another way in which we could learn this b'raisa. I mean, not a b'raisa, actually, it's a statement of Rabbi Yochanan. Hachamayaskinan, Rabbi Yochanan was talking about a case of kigon shenetolo mimenu v'chazar v'fkido etzlo. This is a case where the Levi actually had a kinyan, meshicha, mamish on these peiros of maaser. Then, after the maaser was delivered to the Levi asked the original bailim to please safeguard them, and he deposited in the hands, hefkido etzel, he deposited in the hands of the balabayis. Now the peiros maaser belong to the Levi. They're located in the reshus of the balabayis. Therefore, he can use them and designate them as trumas maaser for his maaser in Bokum Aker, because the Yisrael can't be chozer bo once the kinyan mashicha was made, and therefore there's no chashash of chazora. The Gemara says, Ihachi, how can you tell me that Rabbi Yochanan is talking about a case where the Levi already had a zchiyah, a mashicha, and the peros? Is Amos sefer? Let's read the next part of this same statement of Rabbi Yochanan. Nisono leben Levi acher, ein lo olav elitaromes. If the Israel decides to give the his maaser, the kur maaser, not to this Levi, but to a different Levi, then the first Levi, who was the recipient of this promise, has taromis. Taromis is something that's noget to Erev Yom Kippur. It could be makpid and demand a bakoshes mechila. And all this is because lo kiyam after chaso, v'is al kedaitoch. If you're talking about a case where the Levi actually made a kinyan, is amai einlo all of elitaromes, you're talking about gzeila mamish. If he takes the kur that belongs to Levi number one and he gives it to Levi number two, that's gzeila. As the Gemara says over here, amai einlo all of elitaromes, keva de moshche mamone isle gabe. If you're talking about a case where the Levi actually made a Kenyan Mashiach on this kur of Maser, then how could it be that the Israel decides to give this kur of Maser to a different Levi when it belongs already to the first Levi? Elolav Shmami, no, we have no choice but to assume that Rav Yochanan is talking about a case of Bidolo Notlo, meaning the Levi never made a Mashiach on the kur of Maser. Ishmami, another Rabbi Yochanan, in a case of where there was no mos given and there was no mashicha done, if it's a matana mu'etes, then there's mechusar amana, and based on this mechusar amana, the Levi can absolutely rely on the fact that the balabais will live up to his promise. Because again, if he doesn't live up to his promise, he's mechusar amana, and therefore the Levi can be mafresh this kur maser as trumas maser on the peiros of maser b'mokom acher. The Gemara now talks about a case where a person was chozer bo; he decides to revoke his original decision, and he doesn't want to buy it now. What happens is the mocher who's selling it, if he has mos, if he's received mos from the lokeach, then he's holding on to these mos. So the Gemara tells the story in this light about ahu garved dioyev zuzi ashum shemei. The lokeach here gave the mos, transferred the mos over to the seller on sesames, and he never actually made a mashiach on the shum shemei. Lesof iyakir shum shemei went up in value, market conditions as such. Is Hajubay. Now, the Mocha decided he doesn't want to sell it. Why should he sell it at the low price when he can get a higher price? Amru Le, the Lokeach, said to him, Leslan Shum Shemei. I'm sorry, the Mocha said to the Kone, I don't want to sell you the Shum Shemei. Shkol Zuzcha, here, take your money back. Lo Shakil Zuze. The Lokech refused to take back the Zuzim. He was probably making some sort of rebellious statement over here. How can you tell me the deal is off? Ignov. Aganov came in and stole the mos that were in the hands of the Mocher. Also, the case came in front of Rava. Is the Mocher obligated to pay to replace these mos and suffer the loss of this Gneva? Amole, Rava said to the buyer, Kavon, the Amrilach Shkol Zuze, since the seller said to you, come and take your Zuzim, Velo Shaklis, and you didn't take advantage of that invitation, you left it in the hands of the of the mocher is lo mi boy shomer sachad lavi lafil shomer chinam nami lohavi. The status of the mocher is not one of a shomer sachar, and he's not even a shomer chinam. If the mos was stolen, there's no way that you could be mechayev the Baal Bayis. He's not a shomer sachar who's chayev for gnev aveda. He's not a shomer chinam in a situation of pshia, and therefore he's potter. So that in this case, Rava basically was willing to allow the mocher to back out of the deal even after he received the zuzim, and claim that, look, you didn't make a kinyan mashiach on the shumshimi, and therefore these zuzim are yours, come and take them. But what happened to the mishapara here? Omru le rabbanu le rava v'boi le kibuli ale mishapara. This mocher who received the most, and now he wants to back out of the deal because shumshimi went up in value, he is deserving of a klala, of a mishapara, because he was chozer bo after matan mos. So why did you, Rav, assume that this mocher is patur for the mos? This mocher doesn't want to accept on himself a mishapara part. He doesn't want to get cursed, let's assume. And therefore, he is not going to he will deliver the shumshimin. He's not going to give the money back. And therefore, if that be the case, then the intention here is that the mocher keeps the mos. And if there was a gneva on the mos, then it's the mocher who suffers that gneva. Amalahu hachinami. Rava said to the Chum, you're right. If the mocher decides that he doesn't want a mishapara, then he, the mocher, will suffer the loss of the mos. He's going to deliver the shumshimin to the buyer. And that's what's going to be. But I was talking about a case where he hasn't yet received or accepted upon himself to deliver the shumshimin and avoid the mishapara. Right now, as far as we know, he just wants to get out of this deal because shumshimin went up in price. And he said to the lokeach, shkol zuzcha, here, I want to give you back your money. And therefore, in such a case, barring the whole issue about a mishapara, the shumshimin belong to the mocher, and the mos belong to the lokeach, and that's it. And the mocher says, lokeach, shkil zuzay, I'm not accepting upon myself any responsibility for your zuzim. Now, the Gemara has a different version of exactly what went on in this story of the shumshimin, and this version is quite radically different than the one that we had. Omar Rav Papi, Omali Ravina. Rav Papa heard from Ravina, who said, Ludidi Omali Ahume Rabbana. Ravina said he had a communication with one of the rabbis, whose name was Rav Tvus Shmei. Vi Amrile, according to another version, it was Rav Shmuel Bar Zutra Shmei. And according to that version, the Iavi Yovile Kol Chalola Di Almolavi Komishani Bidibure, that you're talking about an individual, this mocher who sells shumshimin, again, we don't know his name, but even if you offered him all the money in the world for those shumshimin, he would not back out of the deal. He received payment for the shumshimin, he's going to be good for his word, he's going to pay up and transfer the shumshimin over. And therefore, you're going to have to tell me exactly what the story is with this particular mocher of shumshimi, and it's not the way you would formulate it, that the mocher shumshimi wants to back out of his promise and the deal to sell the shumshimi. That you can never get him to do. He made a deal, he made a commitment on selling the shumshimi, or from the whole world, he's not going to back out. But b'didi avdu havi uvda, Ina was saying that this story that happened with the shumshimi happened with me. It was my story. It had nothing to do with rescinding a sale, because had I received the money to deliver the shumshimin, I would not rescind the deal, no matter how much money you paid me. But what was the story? Hahu Yoma Apanya Demali Shabbos Ahava. That particular day it was Erev Shabbos, towards the evening. Shabbos was about to enter. Vav Yasivna, I was sitting in my house. V'osahu Gavra V'kai Bava. And this individual came knocking on the door. V'yomar Lini says to me, Islacha Shumshabe Lazabune. Can you sell me any Shumshabin? And now we're turning to the Daf Mem Tesamid Beis. Amri Lei Lo. I said to him, I don't have Shumshabin. So he said to me, Omar Li, Lehevi Hanach Zuzi Bepikodun Gabach, Doha Choshchali. It's Erev Shabbos, and I'm stuck with this money. I was hoping to buy Shumshabin from you. I thought you had them to sell me. Can you do me a favor? Can I deposit these most in your possession? Because it's about to be Shabbos. I can't carry these mos. Amri Lei. So I said to him, Ha Besa Kamach. My house is in front of you. I never accepted upon myself Shmira. I never committed myself, you know, Hanach Lefanai, and I'm gonna watch it. There was no commitment on my part. Osvina Bebesiv Ignov. He put his mos in my house. They were stolen. Osel Kamei the Rava. And that person came in front of Rava to clarify, what is the din in this case? A person says, Are Besi Lefanech, is that called Kabbal Shmira? Omole, so Rava answered, Kol HaBesi Kamach, anyone who says my house is in front, is here, is off for you, is Lomi by Shomer Sachet Lohavi Elafi, Shomer Chinam Nami Lohavi. There was no Kabbalah Achrayus, there's no Kabbalah Shmira. HaBesi Kamach is really means that you're not a trespasser if you put your mos here, but I'm not responsible for them. I'm not a Shomer Sachar and not even a Shomer Chinam. So you can't even hold me for Pshia here if I didn't watch properly and the Ganav came in because I left the door open. There's no claim against me. Rav Papi now quotes the next piece of Ravina, because after Rav Papi says that after Ravina told me the story, Amri Lei, I asked him the following kasha. How could you tell me that the question came in front of Rava? In terms of Shmira on Mos and not Shmira on monies that were given to pay for the Shumshabin, for Amru Lei Rabbanu LeRava, why did the Rabbanan complain and sort of attack Rav and say, Boile LeKabuli Alei Mishapara, that the person who, the Moker who wants to back out of the deal on the Shumshabin should be getting a whammy of Mishapara? Well, what does Mishapara have to do with anything here in your story? Fi Omar Li. And Ravina said to that Chacham said to me, Lo hayu dvar miolam. That story never happened. They never asked Rava about Mishapara. The story happened the way I told you. It was about Kabbal Shmira. It was on Stamos. It wasn't most that were paid for Shumshamin and Geendikt. Now the Mishnah says that according to Rav Shimon Omer Kol Shakesef Biyado Yodal Al Yono, which means that in a case where the seller received most, the lokeach actually gave him the most, he never made a meshicha on the object, is the mocher can back down from the deal, because it was never a meshicha to clinch the deal. Rav Shimon holds that although the mocher can back down from the deal, because the most are in his hands, the lokeach does not have the right to back down from the deal. And the Gemara now wants to give another case where Rav Shimon says that the lokeach cannot back down from the deal. Tanya, we learned in the Braisa, Omer Rav Shimon, Amosai, when is there a possibility of Chazara in a case where the most were delivered, but there was never a Mashiach? That's Bizman Shakesev HaPeros Biyad HaMocher. The Mocher received the most for Peros. He's holding on to the Peros. He's holding on to the most. Then there's Halacha of Chazara. Avol, but in a case of Kesef Biyad Mocher Uperos Biyad Lokeach Eino Yochel Lachzer Vomidesha Kaspo Biyado. Now the language here is a little bit ambiguous, and the Gemara understood at the beginning that what it means is that the Kesef is in the hands of the Lokeach. So it means that, which is a little strange, again it says Kesef Biyad Mocher Uperos Biyad Lokeach, but then it says Mideisha Kaspo Biyado. So it sounds like the Lokech is holding on to the Mos. So the Gemara immediately says Biyado means Lokech has it, but the Lokech paid for the object. Ubiad mocher hu, and the monies are in the hands of the mocher. Ela, but rather than they should dmei kaspo biyado. In other words, the mocher can't be choser bo because the peros are in the hands of the lokeach. Now, here's a very strange scenario. I mean, not strange, it's the classical scenario. The mos have been delivered to the mocher, he's holding on to the mos. It's biyado, right? Biyad mocher hu. And the peros are biyad lokeach. Okay, so that's a sale. So what's going on here? Pshita, the Gemara says, if there was a sale, how could you even entertain the possibility, the thought, that the mocher could be choser bo? The deal was signed, done. Amar Rav, Achmai Yaskini, Kigon Shahoysa, Aliyah Shalokech, Muskeres Biad Mocher. It wasn't that the Lokech took these peros into his own house. That's not exactly so, although it does say Peres Biad Lokech. What does Peres Biad Lokech mean? The mocher had rented out space in the attic or on the roof of this lokeach. And the lokeach now pays the mocher for the peros. The peros are located in what's legally his property, the lokeach's property, because the lokeach rented out to the mocher this roof or whatever it is. And now, if let's say a fire would break out, then there's no hesitation on the part of Lokeach to go and save his peros. And we always assumed that the reason why we need Mashiach is because of this very scenario where the Lokeach will watch from a distance as his fruits are going up in smoke. And there's nothing he can do about it because they're not in his rishus. The Gemara says, "Time am I to kini rabbanu Mashiach gzeres yomelo nisruhu chitecha baliyah." The mocher is going to say, "Look, a fire broke out, right? You paid me most, but a fire broke out. I couldn't save your peros, which because he didn't want to do the tirch of saving the peros, and therefore the lokech is going to lose. You know, he paid good money, and he's going to lose his peros. But hacha here in this case, Bereshus said lokech ninu says Rava, the peros are in technically the reshus of the lokech because he owns this house and the roof of the house, the attic of the house, and he can enough l'dleika bionis if a fire spontaneously breaks out." Then iu tarchu maisile, since it's in his own reshus, it's on his roof, he could and he should do all the efforts and sweat and toil in order to save these peros from the sreifa. Is therefore in such a case we can go back to the ikra din of mos konos, and this of course reflects the shita of Rav Yochanan that dvar Torah mos konos, the rabbanim made a takana and they required Mashicha in order to avoid this kind of scenario of Nisrufu Chitechab Aliyah, but in the case where the Aliyah was of the Lokeach, he owns the Aliyah, and it was Muskeres Biad Mocher, here the Chashash of Nisrufu Chitech Aliyah, that the Lokeach has no wherewithal, no recourse to save his Chita, doesn't apply, because the Chita in his possession is roof, and therefore we go back to the Ikar Din of Dvar Torah Mos Konos. Bryce, according to Reb Shimon, is based on the fact that Reb Shimon holds like Reb Yochanan, back in Reb Yochanan of Mem Zayinam and Beis, that Dvar Torah Mos Konos, and the Rabbanim made this Takana, which doesn't apply in this particular scenario. What's interesting here about this Sugya, of this Bryce, is that at the moment that the Lokeach gave the Mos over to the mocher, he was kona the peros, because we're going back to the ikra din of Dvar Torah mos konos. Now Rashi explains that the lokech is not kona midin chotzer, and that would circumvent the whole problem of mos konos. Who needs mos if he's kona midin chotzer? Because he owns the gag. But the answer is that since the maskir is paying rent for the gag, then we have to know exactly who owns this chotzer. And Rashi seems to assume that the chotzer ain't a kona lamaskir bekinyan chotzer. The maskir, who's the lokeach here in this case, cannot avail himself of his own chotzer to be kona of a chotzer, even though he's the bailam of the chotzer, because the socher has paid rental, and that gives him schiris kanya, gives him ownership rights to this chotzer, and therefore this aliyah, which is serving as a chutz, it cannot serve as a chutz on behalf of the Bailam Lokeach. But since, again, Rabbi Shimon holds the Minat Torah Mos Konos, the Chacham made this takana, and they didn't want to be to allow to validate the Kenyan Mos because of Shema Yisrafu Chitekav Aliyah. In this case, where there's no Chashash, we go back to the Iker Dindo Rice, and the Chachamim did not make a takana. Hahu Gavra, the Yoiv Zuzi Achamra. There was a story of someone who paid money for wine. He didn't make the mashiach on the wine. He just paid the money to the mocher. L'sof shama deka boy leminsave debe parzok rufila. Who is this parzok? He's the viceroy. And the word got out before the lokech took possession of the wine, that the office of Parzak, who was the viceroy, they wanted to requisition the wine. They wanted to take over the wine. So obviously the lokech wants to get out of this deal. He wants to get his money back. Omalei havli zuzi, therefore he tells the seller, give me back my money, loboy. Lobin and Chama, I don't want your wine. Also, the question came before Rav Chizda, and the seller was arguing, but the kinyan was already clinched. So Amalei Rav Chizda told him, Kider she tiknu meshicha b'mochrim, kach tiknu meshicha b'lekuchos. To the same extent that the Chacham required meshicha for the seller, in other words, the seller is allowed to go renege and rescind his void his kinyan until the buyer makes the kinyan meshicha. So to tiknu meshicha b'lekuchos, there is an institution here on behalf of the buyers that the buyer can also rescind and renege from the deal until he actually makes a kinyan meshicha on the merchandise. It's against Rav Shimon, of course. And therefore the buyer has rights to demand the return of his money. And I just wanted to read this comment to you. Just one second, where was it here? Rav Chizda is saying that Kishem Shetiknu Mashiach B'mochrin, meaning the way Rav Shimon, the Tana Rav Shimon would have it, is Tiknu Mashiach L'mochrim. They want to allow the mocher to have the ability that if there's a sreifa, he wants to get out of this deal. And he could be chozer boa, for example, if the items that he's selling, the metalthlin, whatever it is, the produce, go up in value, he should be able to back out of the deal. But they never gave the lokeach that right. Comes along Rav Chizda, he says, we don't accept Rav Shimon, we accept the Chachamim who argue with Rav Shimon, and they're of the opinion that Kshem Shetiknu HaMocha Yochel Achzer Bo, and this was done so that we motivate him to try to save these payros, which may go up in value and he could sell it on a higher value, is they also made a takon on behalf of the Lokeach to allow the Lokeach to be Chozer Bo. And if the Lokeach can be Chozer Bo, that's more of a reason why the Mocher is going to make a tremendous effort to save these payros, because otherwise he'll take the loss, because the Lokeach can be Chozer Bo. And therefore, in this case, when the Lokeach found out that the Parzok is coming to take away this wine, he backed out of the deal, and that's what he's allowed to do, because we pass like the Chachamim against Reb Shimon, and even the Lokeach has the power, the authority to be Chosebo. Now, this Mishnah that we're about to learn is the Mishnah of Onah, which is a parsha in Vayikra Chafhei, V'chisimkru mimka l'amisecha o'kano miyad amisecha altonu ish es achiv. And the Sifra states that this pasuk deals with onos mamon, that the mocher should not mislead and fraud the lokeach and sell him the object at a price that's way above the market value. We'll see exactly how much it is. And at the same time, for the same token, the lokeach should not trick the mocher if he happens to know the lokeach what the market value is by underpaying the mocher. And our Mishnah wants to know what's the shear of onah. What's the discrepancy here between the monies that were being demanded or that were agreed upon, and the market value. Hona arba kesef. What does it mean? You take esrim vi arba kesef, and you divide it by four, and you get six. Lisela. That means if the true value on the market of this object that's being sold is a sela, which means 24 mos of kesef, then the ono would be arba mos, which is a shtus of the mekach, which would mean two things. Number one, it would mean that if instead of charging him 24 kesef, mos kesef, he charged him an extra four, the equivalent of a sixth, or if he underpaid him by four, instead of willing to pay him 24, he paid him 20. In all these cases, there's a shtus mekach, and that's the shear of onah. Now, again, we don't know what that means in terms of onah. Does it mean that the whole deal is off, or that he can back down for the deal, or it just means that he pays him back the differential, and that's what the courts will force him? That we're going to have to see the sugya. But in any case, 1/6, that's the magic percentage that sets up onah. Later on, the price is going to bring a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi and Rabbi Nasan, where the shear of onah of a sixth of the mekach allows the misana, who has ever cheated, to break up this mekach, or it only means the mekach is chayv kaim, but he has rights to demand a reimbursement for that shtus because he was cheated out of a shtus. The Gemara is going to explain all of this later on, and the Rishonim are going to battle and debate whether or not there's an isra onah in the case of pachos mishtus. The Ramban shita is that even in pachos mishtus there's an isra onah. You're not allowed to overcharge or underpay. If you know that the only thing is that if it's under a shtus, then there's no possibility, there's no recourse to be toveh and a bezdin to demand payment for this onah because the assumption is mechila. That's the sheet of the Ramban. The Chinuch is of the opinion in Mitzvah Shin Lamed Vav, Shin Lamed Zayin, that Pachas Mishtus is Mutal Lahanos L'chatchila. There's no Isa whatsoever. The Rosh himself vacillates back and forth whether Pachas Mishtus is not an Isur because there's a built-in Mechila in Pachas Mishtus, or no, there's an Isur, but just there's no recourse to get your money back. And Mosai Mutal Lahachzir. Is this an open-ended thing that, you know, a year from now, a decade from now, the mocher, the lokech is going to come, or the mocher is going to say, I was cheated? No, there's got to be a shear, an ultimate amount. And the Mishnah establishes that's kedesha yira letagar o lekrova. We give him a little bit of time after the sale was done so that the object can be shown to a socher, to a professional seller who knows how to evaluate it, or to one of his krovim who's a bucky, and he'll find out whether he paid the right price or not. After that period of time, that very short window of time has passed, then the lokeach no longer has a recourse to claim onah. And that's how the Rabbanan created a circle in which the mechira finally, you know, is finally finito, it's finally a closed and done deal. And if the lokeach was indeed cheated and he was overcharged, but he didn't say anything within that period of time, then we have an assumption that he was mochel and he waived the onah. Hora Rabbi Tarfon Balud, Hona Shmone Kesef Meyesrim V'Arba Kesef V'Sel. It's not four, but rather it's six, which means six over 24 is a third. That if the true value was 24 and the seller charged him 32, which means he added a shlish to the mekach, then it's onah. Now, this is great for the professional sellers, you know, who do this, who make a living out of selling and buying. They can now charge up, according to Rabbi Tarfon, charge up to a third more above the price of the market, and nobody could claim onah. Samchu tagre lud. The Sochrim in Lud were very happy to hear Rabbi Tarfon's psak because they were experts in mischar, and they would like to sell at a higher price, and now they can sell at a high price, which is up to an extra third of the value. Amalehem, Rabbi Tarfon says, don't get so excited, don't dance in the streets, because there's another thing, another law in which I disagree with the Chachamim. Not only do I set the bar of this, the shear of Onat Shlish, but I also disagree as to how long of a period of time we give Loket to come back and claim that he was overcharged. Kol ayom mutal lachzerbo. He has a right to come and undermine this and invalidate the Loket has a right to invalidate this mechira for the entire day. Let's say up till the end of the day, up till Shkia. So this is working against the Tagrei Lud, because they were hoping that the Lokech would not come back and claim Onah. But now we're giving him the balance of the day to claim Onah. Amrulos, the Tagrei Lud said to Rabbi Tarfon, Yaniach lanu Rabbi Tarfon v'komenu. In other words, get off our backs here. We don't want to take your psak. We don't want to be knowing your minug. But Chazru, Lino, Kedivrei Chachamim, they want to go back to the Divrei Chachamim because they want, even though they lose on one end, because the Shir of Onon now goes down to a more minimum, a more limited shtus, but on the other end, they're also cutting down the time of the Lokech for claiming Onah, because we're going back to the original Shir of Kedei Sheyireh Letagar or Lekrovo. And that's a very short span of time. Of course, the literature here, the Achronim, go to town here. How could it be that the Tagrei Lud decide, you know, we're going to paskin like the Chachamim, you know, we're going to paskin like you? I mean, why is it up to them? I mean, they don't have the ability to decide the halacha. By the way, the two horos, the two piskei dinim of Rabbi Tarfon really merge into one. Since Rabbi Tarfon is expanding the amount, the percentage of that constitutes onah to a shlish, now you're talking about an onah, you know, gedola, and you got to give the lokeach a little bit more time if he's going to suffer such a major loss by being overcharged a third of the value, the true market value of the object. So it's a schum gadol kaze. It's such a large amount, it's one shlish, that we have to have also a clear-cut proof that there was mechila on the part of the mis'ana. And for that, we have to give him the balance of the day. Again, getting back to the question, how the Tagrei Lud have authority to decide, you know, whether halacha is like them or not. So there's a principle in halacha called kimle. Kimle means if you come to claim against me and force me to pay you, and I have as a defendant, I have a claim kimle, which means that I know there's machlokas in this case, and I pass like the one opinion who favors my position, the chacham who patters me from any payment. That's called kimli, and he's allowed to do such a thing. He's muhsak, and there's machlokas about it. So the Tagrei Lud saying that we all like the chachamim in this case, and if the period of time of Kedei Sheyireh Lekrovo, etc., passed by, and now the Mis'ana, the Lokech, is going to come and say, Tagrei Lud, please give me back my money because you overcharged me. The Tagrei Lud have a right to say, Kimlan, we paskin like the Chacham against Rabbi Tarfon. And, you know, you that window of opportunity quickly passed, and you did not come on time before the buzzer went off to make your claim of Onah, and therefore you have no claim of Onah. That's called Kimle. The Gemara now quotes Itmar Amachlokes between Rav and Shmuel. Rav Amar Shtus Mekach Shaninu Ushmuel Amar Shtus Mos Nami Shaninu. Please note that Shmuel accepts Shtus Mekach, but he wants to add another kind of an Onah, which is called Shtus Mos, which means that the Onah is not in the shear of the market value, it's in the shear of how much he paid. So, for example, in a case where, let's say, the market value is 5, let's say, and the lokeach paid 6, correct? Now, in such a case, Well, let me give you a flip case. Let's say the chafetz is worth 7, and the buyer only paid 6. So this is according to Shmuel, this is considered basar mos hazlinon, and therefore it's onav. According to Rav, basar mekach hazlinon. And now, if we take an object that's worth 5 and you charge him 6, that's 1/5. 1/5 is what we call bittul mekach. That's not onav. Onav is 1/6. Or, for example, in the case of an object that's the market value is 6 and the payment was 7, I'm sorry, if the market value was 7 and the payment was 6, then the loss to the seller is only 1/7, where we apply the principle of mechila. But according to Shmuel, we look at the monies that he's paid, and he paid him 6 for something that's worth 7, which is 1/6 of an underpayment, and therefore there is onah. So Belina will pick this up in the next year.